I didn't really walk in off the street. I, as soon as I started going to specs, and I learned how to run the equipment reasonably well, I knew how the faders worked. I knew how to read a clock. I knew how to rack tape, and I knew how to do things. I went down and talked to Calvin Usury, who was the guy that was the kind of in charge of all the board ops, because there were a lot of syndicated shows, and then there was shows that were run by Jim Lawler and these guys that were part of the programming staff, and they didn't want to be there on Sunday morning to do some Music of the Black Church show, or you know, so they would tape these shows during the week on big reel-to-reels, and they would just leave them in these boxes, and then I would come in on Sunday morning, and I'd rack them up and play them, and play the film music to make sure that they, you know, started and ended on time. And it was those days, the early days of probably 77, from 77 until I got my show, that, you know, I was on the top of the Maccabees building. I'm the only person in the building. I'd have to turn the transmitter on. I had to have a third class endorsed to do that stuff, which I got through, you know, the FCC. I almost said the FCC website, which, of course, there was no fucking websites in those days. But I had to go apply for it. The weird thing is I still have it. I still have my third class endorsed that sits in one of my cars. And so when I get it, it kind of reminds me of the fact that you had to know something in those days. You couldn't just walk in. You know, you had to know something about how transmitters worked. But I have to log the transmitter on, turn it on, fire it up, get the thing running, rack up the tapes. I have to be there like 10, 20 minutes early to make sure that, you know, the thing starts on time. And then fire it up, and then hopefully everybody in Detroit is sitting there at, you know, 5:30 or 6 o'clock in the morning, because the transmitter would be dark, you know, until 6 on Sunday mornings. And I had fired up, I think it was Music of the Black Church first, and then I think this program called Obod, and then the classical music thing that one of the old classical producers basically would, oh, it was the opera show. So I'd play a bunch of opera music. And while those opera records were going, and the tapes for, I would go through the library and look for all the new releases. And there was a turntable in the music library, and I would needle all of them and listen to a bunch of stuff, because I could envision that if I got a show the next week or the week after or the week after that, that I'd have to have enough music to fill a couple of hours. So I started going through this kind of like rabid feeding process of getting through everything in the library that I possibly could. From 77, you know, I'm guessing March, up until I finally got my own show. And then I was able to, in fact, I left at one point, moved to California and came back. And that's when they finally gave me my show. I actually did a couple of fill-ins for Jerry Stormer, I think. I think he filled in once for somebody else. I can't remember who it was. But I'd been there since basically 77, devouring the whole library. I think I knew every piece of vinyl in the library at one point, because I could, you know, find it all and listen to it at one point, whether to listen to it for 5 minutes to get an idea what the band was all about. Because you got to remember, in those days, there was no, like, American music press that sent out a release schedule. This is what's coming out. This is who's on it. This is who plays fiddle. None of that stuff existed. You had to kind of be a liner reader back in those days.